Hello, I'm William.
I'm Rob.
And I'm Angry Duck.
And we're
hardly
qualified.
See, we can't even say it at the same time. That's how bad we are.
And this is episode 0.5, which just followed episode 0. And the reason why it's not 1 is because a week has not passed. And that's because Ducky just showed up. So we were having so much fun, we figured we would continue.
Anyway, I apologize for my tardiness. I work nights, and 6 o'clock, 1800 is a little early for me, especially when I take a sleeping pill in the morning to make sure I can get to sleep. So I ended up sleeping through my alarm, and at 8 o'clock is when my second alarm went off, and that's what actually woke me up. So,
and here you
are. I'm still a little foggy headed. I've got half a cup of coffee in me, yeah, though. So
we'll forgive you for today. Next time, now.
Yeah, and I'm drinking whipping cream in my coffee.
Whipping cream, are you?
Whipping cream, yeah. It's 33% milk fat.
Like from a calf?
No. It's pre-whipped. It's the cream that it's like regular cream, except it's just because it's like usually coffee cream is only 18%, but this is twice that, and it's glorious. But if I have more than one cup a day, I'm going to die.
Well, okay. So
please don't have more than one cup a day.
Or at least not on air.
We honestly do. Yeah, exactly. Die off air.
No, don't die at all. No dying. At the end of the semester, maybe, but not at the beginning, okay?
Yeah. All right. I don't know if you listen to that, what's his name? The guy who calls himself the perennial man or something. What the hell is his name? He's taken hundreds of supplements now or something so that he can live forever. He's saying that we're sitting on the verge now of where technology is going to take over from biology, and pretty much anybody born in the latter half of the 20th century and the early 21st century is going to be able to live forever should they choose through technological means.
Would you want to? I mean,
not really. I mean, I would like to be able to.
My shit's falling already. I don't know if I want to go through another 100 years of that.
Well, no, I mean, like, take your consciousness out and put it, like, your consciousness can live forever. I mean, your body probably won't. I mean, all things come to an end eventually, but, you know.
You sound like a Feist song.
What the hell is his name? It's like.
Yeah, you have Google.
Yeah, I know.
Do you want me to send you the link for let me Google this for you?
Once was enough.
I was just going to say, William sent me the link. It might have been we two, Ducky and I, the link for. Let me Google this for you. Plosives.
Yes. I know what plosives are, and I know what splexus is or whatever it were. I had just never heard them referred to with the technical term before. To me, they're talking about popping your P's and whistling your S's.
Yes.
So
whistling your S's.
Shilling and popping your P's.
That's what you. Get a good mic and a nice windscreen and learn how to talk and enunciate.
Yes.
But anyway, enunciate.
Okay.
So, Ducky, you want to tell us a little about yourself? Why are you hardly qualified?
Okay, well, first of all, I'm born and raised in Western Canada. I'm a conservative. I'm a Canadian conservative, which is libertarian to the rest of the fuckers, which is libertarian to the Americans. Sorry. The Americans, conservatives and liberals are completely broken because of their two-party system. So they have everything. I did a whole blog post about the nature of political leanings in the States and why they're different than everywhere else in the world. But
what's the address for that blog?
ragingquack.blogspot.ca.
Just from the blog title, it's like, no wonder we chose hardly qualified. You've got quack in your blog title.
And not just quack, it's a raging quack, because I'm an angry duck. You see how that works there?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Anyway, I'm also an atheist. I'm a skeptic. I'm a humanist. And when I use the phrase humanist, I'm referring it to a counter-feminist context, not in the counter-religious context. Although humanism carries connotations with both anti-religion and anti-special rights. So hopefully we'll be able to have discussions on all three of those topics. The reason I'm hardly qualified, though, is because most of it is...
I hope those topics come up. Those would be fun-ish.
Yeah. I don't think we could avoid them if we tried.
Yes.
That's well, true. True story. But, you'll find out why, dear listener, in about 30 seconds.
Yes, because I never shut up and I love to interrupt people. So, you know, when Willie and Bobby get mad at me, you'll know. They'll just be like, oh my God, shut the fuck up. I'm also horribly profane, and I'm not like Seth Andrews in the sense that profanity is a surgical strike is effective. I like to carpet bomb my profanity, so it usually doesn't actually mean anything. Unfortunately, I don't. You know, usually if I'm not being profane, that's when I'm trying to hit on a very important point. I think
this is true. Actually, I remember last time we were sitting in Denny's in Western Canada. Yes, that was definitely how you were approaching things. It's like I actually noted to you once verbally that I hadn't heard you swear for something like 5 minutes, and you turned to me and said, "This is because I'm being serious."
Because this is important, damn it. but I went to university for the hard sciences. I didn't do any social science studies. I've never really liked the soft, gooey feeling bullshit. I looked at you know, and a lot of this religion nonsense, a lot of this feminist nonsense is all based off of feelings and how we want to make people feel. And because feelings are so incredibly subjective, I like evidence. I like yes or no answers. I like to be able to say, this is why this is true, and here's a reason. And that the reason itself is good enough. You don't have to rely on a person's, you know, how they feel when they view that reason or their interpretation of that reason and that kind of nonsense, which is what a lot of both religion and feminism seem to rely on is a motive reasoning
and philosophy and most and philosophy that are not absolutely captive to enlightenment rationality.
Yeah, which is why they should not be used to inform law.
I probably agree with you, Ducky. We'll get to why that might shock our listeners in about 30 seconds. William, introduce thyself.
Well, my name is William. I'm a IT entrepreneur and IT student at Mount Royal University in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and Western Canada, of course, where we all know each other. It's been about 15, 16 years, I think.
The fuck, we're getting old, man.
Yeah, we were debating what we did to that house on Brisbane and why they should have burned it down when we left.
Yeah. I still love that house.
I know. I hated that house, but I love the people in it.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's... Well, I mean, people is what makes a house a home, though. So even though there was like 10 of us jammed in there like freaking, you know, Filipino immigrants, we were, you know, we loved that place.
I remember the day we got our electricity cut off and one of our roommates' dad had to come and convince NMAX that to turn it back on. He had to pay the bill and pay a deposit. That was...
Wow.
Really?
That was before my time, boys.
Yeah, that must have been before my time. Who was in charge of the bills at the time? Was it still Josh?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Anyway, it doesn't matter. No blame.
So
it was
Canada,
just a lot of fun.
Each other. Go on with your introduction.
So, yeah, I'm married and... that informs a lot of my angst, but I'm married to a man, I guess. I'm queer, I suppose. That I hate that term, but whatever.
I do too. Like, I don't understand why queer is even accepted as a phrase. Like,
I'm gay. Homosexual is too clinical. I mean, I like talk. How does that go? Does that work for everybody? Can we move on? And I've been
that doesn't married... necessarily make you gay. I think liking cock and not liking pussy together makes you gay.
Touché.
Okay.
Touché, you're gay.
But no, I think that hits on a really good point, because I got into a huge argument with a bisexual, that your sexual orientation is based on your attraction, not your self-identity, and that your self-identity is informed by your sexual orientation.
Both and? Why do those two compete with each other?
Because she's the woman that I was having the argument with – sorry, I'm trying to scratch my eye and I keep punching my mic – she says that she's attracted to men, but she identifies as a lesbian, and therefore she's a lesbian because she says she's a lesbian. And I'm like, yeah, well, I say I'm a pickup truck. That doesn't make me a pickup truck, you know? Okay, if you're attracted to men as well as women, you're bisexual. Thing. No. Your sexual orientation is based off your attraction, and I think your identity is based off your sexual orientation. It's a chain from 1 to 2 to 3. It's not that you get to arbitrarily decide your sexual orientation or your identity, particularly when that identity conflicts with your sexual orientation.
Okay, so... Oh, wow. Well, we're not even done our introductions, and now I already...
Okay, see? This is me interrupting people again.
But I... Then, by your logic, transgender people don't actually exist.
How do you say
what?
That? Where did I say that?
Well, okay, well, no, but hold on. By the logic of it's a 1 to 2 to 3, it's clearly not for a significant portion of the population. Okay, I think for me, whatever the person wants to call themselves, that's not an it's calling yourself a pickup truck versus calling oneself a political lesbian, it is not analogous. It's a false analogy. Because they're two completely different orders of discourse. That's why. you're not making a comment identifying yourself with an inanimate, non-conscious. There is no morality involved, nothing like that. But when you choose an identity marker, that involves a whole lot of decisions about who you want to be in the world.
My point. My point is that when you choose something like the label lesbian, lesbian comes with a definition. And when you choose to use that label to describe yourself, if you don't actually match the label, you're lying to the people around you, and it's intellectually dishonest.
Well, hold on. That's not entirely true. You know, whatever your definition of a given label is, that's pretty fluid for anybody. There's no such thing as an absolute in anything.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
that's an absolute statement. But...
I don't know. Lesbian, I think, is pretty well agreed upon that a lesbian is a woman who is attracted only to other women. And a gay man is a man who is attracted only to other men. And a bisexual is a person who is attracted to both genders. And an asexual is a person who is attracted to neither gender.
Okay, so...
Right? I mean, these
are... And what
these
if there are more than two genders?
Well,
hold
on.
What if there are more than two sexes?
Before we get to that,
well,
I mean...
Sex and gender is different. There's only two sexes. And there's...
No, that's not in hard sciences, we're talking biology.
Yeah,
and
in
neurology.
Biology... There is male, there is female, and there are derivations in between. It's not like there's a third one off to the side.
My theoretical understanding when I read the hard sciences stuff, the biology, is that there are nobody knows how many sexes there are. There are at least 20. Okay.
Are you fucking kidding me? You either have an XY chromosome or you have an XX chromosome. That is the marker that tells you what sex you are.
No. I'm sorry.
Show me anybody who has an X purple or an XW chromosome.
No, I understand.
There's only two options.
Okay, so I'm gonna interrupt you guys for a second here. So
sorry, finish your intro, then Bobby can do his intro, and then we can start arguing about sex.
Baby, let's talk about you and me.
Stop. Fair use.
So I'm friends with these guys for whatever fucking reason.
15 years.
Oh, you love us. You have a decade's worth of reasons between you and me. I don't know about you and Ducky.
Oh yeah.
Anyway.
Well, he slept in my basement a few times.
That sounds kinky.
No.
Never mind.
We've been roommates on and off. But
you know, whenever I've fallen on hard times and I've lost my place to live, Will is my go-to, you know. He's my homeless shelter.
You get fed better.
That's true.
But yeah, so you know what? I don't know really else what to say. The rest of it will come out. I have my own website, williamconner.ca, where I post fractions of my thoughts, essays, articles that I write, photography, shit like that, whatever type of self-promotion I'm up into, that's where I go for my own ego surfing.
Are you actually allowed to, the stuff that you put up for your newspaper, are you allowed to mirror that to your own website, or does the newspaper own that content now?
So, well, it depends on the agreement. I've written for a few publications. The one that Ducky is talking about is the Reflector, which is the student newspaper at Mount Royal University. We, as authors, actually own the copyrights to our articles.
Okay.
And works for that paper. They just own first
dibs.
Print rights. But we own everything else before or afterwards. I checked. Robert.
Hi, my name is Rob, and I live in Toronto. And I was raised in Western Canada in the Calgary area, which is where I met Ducky because we went to high school together. And then after high school, I met Will. I am a gay guy. I am not married. What else can I tell you? I'm currently in school by distance learning at University of Birmingham in the UK for theology and religion, because I might become an Anglican priest when I grow up.
You grow some, up?
You know, like, yeah, 30. I'm 32, actually. Thanks for asking. So I might become an Anglican priest when I grow up. I hope to also be a good writer and a good scholar. I tend to jump from the political left in Canada to something I hope is radical. As in not quite making. On, not
you
quite.
Know, the radical left is like communism.
No. I mean shit, off right? the spectrum. Okay, so radical, what I mean is that there are lots of institutions and ideas that need to be pushed further. So that's one meaning of radical. And then we also need to understand the history and the roots, the root of the ideas better. And so that's the second of radical. So I hope that although I tend to sort of start on the Canadian left, I don't make decisions as though it's an American ideological package. So obviously, if I want to be an Anglican priest, I'm, you know, a convinced theist. I identify as feminist. This drives Ducky nuts. What else can I say just to keep it interesting? Yeah, I tend to use the term queer for specific reasons, depending on who I'm talking to.
That's another co-option of a word that doesn't mean queer means different. It doesn't mean gay. It means odd.
I agree with you.
You know, and yeah, you're
gay
a little
means
queer.
Jovial. It doesn't mean homosexual, but we still use it.
Yeah, I guess that's true. That's one of my big pet peeves is when fucking language keeps getting arbitrarily changed by people with agendas.
Well, everybody's got it.
Exactly. So stop fucking around with my language.
That's the point of language. Language is to be fluid. It's to express ideas. It's to adapt with the time. It's
yeah,
a created living, breathing tool.
You also have to have enough structure that people understand what you say.
Yeah. If I say to you bubblegum and I mean applesauce and you think I mean spaceship, when I say let's go get some bubblegum, I'm going to the store, you're going to NASA, and we're getting confused.
Well, you said you're getting bubblegum. I am getting bubblegum.
Okay, but now see, here's where you talk about interpretive communities. But see, all of this feely sort of philosophical shit that you don't have patience for, Ducky, is yes. Well, no, patience for. Because I think if you understood that it was relevant to your life, you'd make time for it, because you're right in the center of all of these things that I study. Almost every time you open your mouth, and then you say you don't have time for the philosophical woo-woo. I'm going to be consistently challenging you that you're actually doing philosophy and you're doing a whole bunch of things that you're not realizing that you're doing. Anyway, yeah, I'm hardly qualified because I sound like an arrogant piece of shit sometimes, so I try not to take myself too seriously.
We try not to take too seriously too.
Thank you.
Okay, just something I wanted to point out is notice how Will, you identified as gay, and Bob, you identified as gay. I suppose for contrast, I need to point out that I'm not gay. But I don't think sexual orientation is so important to identity that it's something we need to talk about.
Well, that, you know what? You
see, that's something that I've noticed.
In that sense, you are a perfect liberal. Every single liberal I've ever met agrees with you. Okay? But most conservatives that I've met, Canadian conservatives and religious conservatives and philosophical conservatives, they find that sexual orientation and sex in general are intrinsically interesting topics. And so...
Oh, yeah. No, don't get me wrong. I think I love talking about sex.
Okay.
Boy sex, girl sex, animal sex. I love sex. Don't okay. get me wrong. I'm not saying it's not interesting. What I'm saying is that it's not central to my identity, whereas it seems to be central to both of yours identity.
No, okay, it's not central to identity. It gives people a frame of reference as to where I could be coming from. For those okay. in the community who have experience with it, I mean, I'm going to be talking a lot about my husband or my partner or whatnot. That the fact that we are gay, operating in a non-majority gay society, even as liberal as you know Calgary society can be, and it's not a redneck society.
No, it's not. That's only what you fuckers in Toronto try to paint it as.
Okay. Hey, anyway, no, guys, none of this regional crap. That's not what we're here for. So, my point being is it helps people kind of understand what challenges we may be facing, and it also clears up any ambiguity if I don't refer to him as a him. And you know what? For those who live within the gay community, there is a distinct difference between how we interoperate versus how straight people interoperate.
Okay. Yeah. Well, then for consistency's sake, I am Angry Duck, and I don't like cock. I like pussy, preferably as much pussy at the same time as possible.
Geez, I hope nobody's children are listening to this.
Look, okay, as long as we're not being violent, see, that's another thing. Violence, I think, is far more reprehensible than sex. For children, for society, pornography should be the stuff that's rated 14A and freaking, you know, the monster truck bullshit and movies where people are getting blown up. That's the shit that needs to be behind the counter with the titles blocked out.
Hey, we are actually much closer to agreement, Ducky. I actually think that Canadian society is much less afraid of sex than our cousins south of the border, and I think that's the way it should stay.
That's because America is pretty much a theocracy. You still have all these nonsense people who are like, "Oh, war on Christmas."
Back that up.
What?
Yes, please.
The theocracy.
What do you mean back up? Oh, do you mean like...
Justify.
Yes.
Justify okay, well, your got, statements, sir.
Okay, you have one major political party in the States who is completely and utterly dedicated to the theocratic control of the United States government. The entire Republican Party is, you know, as they refer to you as the religious right, you know?
No, as much as I hate to say this, because I almost agree with what you're saying, Ducky, the entire Republican Party people should not assume absolute overlap with the religious right.
Well, no, they shouldn't. But the problem, because there's only two parties in the States that people take seriously, which they should, right?
Right.
The way politics works in the States is that I don't have to be good to get elected. I just have to point out how the other guy is bad, right? It's not a vote for like it is in Canada, like it is in Europe, like it is in any other multi-party democracy, because you have multiple choices. You have to pick which one you want, not which one you don't want, right? So, but in the States, there's only two options. So you have it's more often how you decide to vote is by who you don't want in power, what policies you don't want. And that's why you have each side demonizing the other, usually without any basis. Like the Democrats just went crazy all over the Republicans with their made-up war on women bullshit, and the Republicans went crazy all over the Democrats with their socialist, you know, he's a communist in hiding, he's not even a real American bullshit, right? And the problem with that is that they end up having to appeal to the extremes, not to the center. In order to govern, they have to appeal further and further to the left or the right in order to get a lot of the wing votes rather than the central votes. Whereas in Canada, we have 3-4 parties, right? I don't know if you really want to count the Liberals or the tree huggers anymore, but we've got the socialists on the left. We've got the liberals who keep moving to the left, and we have the conservatives who keep moving to the center. And that's how the conservatives keep winning more and more votes, is because their policies keep moving further and further to the center, and they're pushing the other two parties to the left.
Or at least their policy claims, anyway.
Their policy claims, yeah. That's another discussion, I think.
Sure. But okay, so just to get us back on track with the original question, so what you're saying is that
the original question is, who are you?
The original question is, Bob, introduce yourself.
Well, yeah, but I think we'll be reintroducing ourselves, you know, dozens of times. But I think about theocracy in the States. So is what I hear you say something like this: because the Republicans need to appeal further and further and further to the edges in order to get votes,
to the American, let's put
so the American sort of extreme right Christian Reconstructionism, those sorts of like very fundamentalist folks, Falwell,
Robertson, William Dean, Lane Craig, those fuckers.
Sure. Well, William Lane Craig is not a fundamentalist.
No,
he's an evangelical,
crazy.
And I don't. Well, that might be true, but he's not in the fundamentalist camp. So okay.
I don't
know
when you justify the murder of children as the glorification of God, that seems pretty fundy to me.
That doesn't strike me as something he would say. So I'd really like to look him up. Like, give me the quote, and
He was talking about how the Israelites were taking over Canaan, and they were chasing the Canaanites out, and how God told the Israelites to kill men, women, child, anybody who stood against them and didn't flee, kill them all to the person. And he was talking about how you justify the murder, the genocide of an entire race of people and the children of that people. And because, you know, Christian theology dictates that children are innocent and that they're not, you know, tainted by sin until they're of an age or whatever, right? And that and he was trying to justify the murder of these children by saying that they hadn't reached the age of consent or whatever it is yet, and thus they were the recipients of an infinite good and salvation of God's love by having their – I think that's the exact phrase. They were the recipients of an infinite good by having their earthly life snuffed out. And is an incredibly offensive and aggressive statement to make, to justify the murder of children as recipients of an infinite good.
No, I hear you. And –
I don't think the distinction whether it's children or not should make a difference, first of all. I mean, that's something.
Fair enough.
This is a very much an American obsession, is the sanctity of youth. Forget the sanctity of life. I mean, where the hell did that come from? I just really want to kind of throw that in there. Anytime anyone's saying that the children are more important than everybody else, I can't support that idea. I think that, you know, they definitely hold promise. They definitely need protection. They're definitely,
but they're not a special class of people.
Well, first of all, I just wanted to go.
They're not an exalted class.
Exalted,
of people.
Yeah.
Right. Fair enough. I would like to go clearly on the record as someone who is learning to understand the history of Christian tradition fairly well, and say that view, if it is Dr. Craig's, and I've heard him say similar things now that I think about it in some books that I've read, I think it's disgusting. And there are the extreme right's version of how they interpret Christian tradition is firmly out of sync with most of Christian history. And that's something I'll go to the wall on if necessary. But so what I'm trying to say, Ducky, is that I agree with you.
No true Scotsman.
And it's not. And it's not.
That's what it sounds like to me. No true Scotsman fallacy.
No, no. No, because I'll go to the wall with you on this one in a future conversation. But what's called Christian fundamentalism, especially in the States, is a spasm that's firmly out of sync with 1800 years of documented Christian tradition.
It's because it's so heavily politicized.
Among other things, yes.
Right? I mean, anytime you mix religion with politics, you're going to end up with that kind of extreme. That's the problem with the Middle East right now, is you have Islam in control of so many governments. You know, when you have religion and politics mixed together, that's why the United States was supposed to be founded on a separation of church and state.
Yes.
Because you want your politics separate from your religion.
You do not want established religion. That is not quite the same thing as what you're describing, Ducky. Because in Canada, what you seem to be describing as separation of church and state functions much better in Canada than it does in the States. But the thing is, we don't have anything guaranteeing so-called separation of church and state in our documents, but we also never had an established church, in spite of the fact that I didn't grow up.
That is so not true, dude. That is so not true.
Actually, it is.
The founding of this country? Are you kidding? Take a look at our Constitution. What are the first words?
Whereas we as a country believe in
the supremacy of God.
Yes, which
everything else follows.
No, because hold on, it's the first
line of our Constitution.
Okay, that has nothing to do. Okay, I'm willing to go to the wall on this one. Yeah. Okay, it has nothing to do. There is no content. There is zero content for the word God in our Constitution in Canada. Okay.
Other than a higher power who's responsible for all existence.
No, but there is no definition, right? So the deists from the States, and there were plenty in Canada too. Okay. Yeah. The deists could supply the definition for God, which is not the same as the definition that Muslims would use, that Christians would use, that Jews would use. So yeah, we affirm the sovereignty of this thing we call God. There's no specific content. Now, the concept of establishment means that the government is specifically sponsoring one.
Do you notice the one group that you're singling out of that entire section of rationale?
How
about Will and I?
We don't affirm the supremacy
of any magical sky daddy.
Fair enough.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's a terrible definition, but that's a terrible definition of God. That was only introduced by the Enlightenment. Okay. So we're talking about establishment. Okay. We're talking about the government specifically sponsoring one specific religious institution
How about the establishment or the support of any religious institution?
I don't disagree with you, Ducky. I'm giving you some history here, because I didn't grow up Anglican, so I had my views corrected on this one several times recently. Okay, this is good history. A lot of people in Canada think that, and the Anglican Church of Canada as an institution in the 1950s certainly behaved as though it was the officially established church. It never was. Okay, this is one of the reasons why Canadians do practically, in the ways that you would affirm and so would I in most cases, the reason why Canadians do what you are calling separation of church and state better is because we're thoroughly apathetic about religion in the public sphere. And what I mean by the public sphere is law and law enforcement and jurisprudence. Mm. Okay, so I'm reading someone like John Rawls on this one. Okay, so the States didn't have that, because these people who were being killed by Anglicans, the Church of England, came across and had this idea of manifest destiny, and we should found a Christian, a specifically radical Christian republic, founded on these values, and we're going to be the New Jerusalem, and God is going to come and live with us. And so anyone who disagrees with us, because we just got our asses kicked by Great Britain, okay, now we have to be the ones who bear the light, and everybody else is living in darkness, and we're frontier pioneering folks. Okay, now this is the U.S. mentality, which is one of many reasons why political conversation in the States is so bound up with religious consciousness, because they had religion built into their entire social structure without even thinking about it, which is not, so they didn't do established religion. They didn't sponsor one specific denomination as this is the one that you need to join in order to get to public office.
Well, with the exception that in Canada we had a complete ban on Catholics.
No, we didn't.
And there's still like eight.
What do you mean, no, we didn't?
We didn't.
There's still eight states. I think eight or nine states that actually ban atheists from public office, despite the fact that the Constitution, despite the Constitution actually stating that there shall be no religious test required for public service.
I agree. And the thing is that I agree with you, Ducky. I think that when that happens, that is reprehensible, because ideas or ideologies can, without fear, be introduced into public conversation and social conversation, and the ones that seem to have value are the ones that rise, and the ones that don't seem to fall. And it's a long game sometimes, but there it is. And so I agree with you when we say that it's wrong that atheists, for example, are restricted from public office for any reason. Like, why? What exactly is the threat of the atheist position?
The way I have heard it described by theists, particularly in the U.S. politics, is okay. That if a person doesn't believe in God, how can you trust their judgment? And the way I look at it is, if a person believes in God, how can you trust their judgment?
Yeah, fair enough. Well,
I mean,
right? Yeah. Well, okay. Well, I definitely don't, and I know from previous discussions, just to flag this, I know that both you and Will don't consider what I'm about to say fully consistent, but speaking as a Christian, I think I have a lot more room for the atheists in the world than the atheists have room for certain kinds of Christian belief. Because I just don't find it. I don't find your commitment, as though you speak for an entire community. I don't find the average atheist's commitment to truth or skepticism or anything like that threatening to my worldview. I don't, because I actually believe that eventually what is true wins, if you want to use the combative image.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll agree with that.
I would actually disagree with that. I don't think that truth is concerned with winning or losing. It just is. It's not a matter of consent or opinion.
But what I mean is that I think that one of the things that we think about, at least in, correct me if I'm wrong, Ducky, but it seems to me that, like, for example, one of the reasons we know that something in science is likely true is because it's beautiful, among other things.
No, not at all.
Mathematically beautiful.
No, beauty is completely subjective. It has nothing to do with establishing what is likely to be true.
Wow, I don't think most people who work in especially mathematics agree with you. I'm absolutely certain that that's not the
case. I think true things can be found to be beautiful.
Are you confusing elegance with beauty?
But they're not, well, see, even
that's
elegance.
That's what I mean, elegance.
But But see, the problem is that something is not true because it's elegant, because it's beautiful.
No, no.
And it's not the other way around. Something is not elegant
factor.
Because it's true. They are completely disconnected from a thing.
I don't think that's true in this
true science, things so. Can be elegant and beautiful, yes. But if it's god-awful ugly, that doesn't mean that it's not likely to be true.
Although yeah. most... Okay, but
that's
most
what I'm saying.
Scientists...
They're not... They're
Well, okay, John Polkinghorne, who used to be a quantum, well, he still is a quantum physicist, but
once you go physics, you never go back.
Well, something like that. I don't know. It's a bizarre world. But one of the things that he says is that obviously what you say is true, but if he actually used the example in an interview that I heard about, if you have this really he called it ugly. He said, if you have this ugly equation that takes 3/4 of a page, the most likely thing is that, he says, mathematicians know beauty when they see it. It's a consensus. Like, everybody goes, no, that's a beautiful equation. E=mc², because it's so simple and explains a whole lot. It's elegant.
E=mc² is only the first 16th of that equation, though.
Yeah. I understand, but this
right?
is the example
I mean,
that he was using.
That's the footnote.
I'm just repeating what I heard from this guy from the horse's mouth, okay? Speaking in a British accent that I barely understood. But he just said, look, if you've got a really messy equation, probably... It's not always true, but probably if you've got a really messy equation, something in the way that you're doing it
okay,
is
but
wrong.
You're arguing subjectivity over truth. That's not.
No, I'm not arguing subjectivity over
you're
truth.
You're saying
but
if
I'm,
you're using words like beauty and messy.
Okay, Polkinghorne. This is Polkinghorne. I can pull you up sources if okay. So I'm relying on him because he's. Been nominated for the Nobel Prize, okay, for physics.
The point that we're
You can't use his statement. You're making an appeal to authority just
because
he's qualified in his.
I'm hardly qualified. He's qualified, so I'm making a statement about someone who's qualified has made this statement. Okay,
yes,
not necessarily in the context that you're using it, though.
Okay. The statement
what
you're
I'm
trying...
saying is that for him, he says mathematical beauty is not subjective. Mathematicians always recognize mathematical beauty when they see it.
Yes,
that is not what you said.
A prerequisite for truth. That beauty is a result of truth.
Exactly.
Okay. You're trying to say what I think you're trying to say is that something that is beautiful must be true. And it's not the other way. That's not the way it works. Something that is true is often beautiful.
Listen to me again, okay? Because what I said was, okay, beauty is one factor in what we know is true. If something is beautiful...
It's not a factor.
It is a factor.
No, it's not. It's a result.
Okay,
it comes after the fact.
Okay, but
veracity and truth comes first. And then beauty is derived from that truth. It's not the other way around. We don't derive truth from beauty.
Okay, but here's the thing, though. I agree with you, but procedurally, we don't know the truth and work backwards. We come to it inductively or deductively. And so beauty for us, if something is true, it exists, but we can find it. And one of the reasons we can find it is because something is beautiful and it gives us one flag among many others. I can see no. Will shaking his head. It's one
beauty,
flag
like...
among others that something might be true. And so we see where it leads.
Maybe within the deductive process, but that doesn't mean the resultant is true.
Yeah. Besides, I know a lot of beautiful things that are completely and utterly dishonest, like makeup and high heels.
I don't know that high heels are
non sequitur.
Those
anyway.
Can't be. Yeah, no, those aren't dishonest. How can you call an
You're not that tall. Dishonest? But no, I mean, women wear high heels because it makes them look taller and it makes their asses look a little more plump and their calves plump out a little bit. They don't really look like that. It's dishonest. The beauty that is created by the high heel is a lie. Mm-hmm. So beauty, elegance, attractiveness, however subjectively you want to define it, are not indications of truth.
Which is why
they may be a feature of truth.
Specified.
It may be a feature.
But this is what I'm saying. They indicate it when we're looking for it. Like, it's not a sole indication. It's not the only indication.
Okay, no, but okay? What you're saying, by saying that they indicate it, that means if we find it, we're on the right track. And that's not necessarily true.
If we find multiple factors together and one of them is beauty, we're probably on the right track.
But beauty is inconsequential.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Truth, since we're talking about truth generating things, truth generates an aesthetics. It generates a way of looking at things and perceiving things and interpreting things. So beauty is bound up in truth. So look, if a woman wearing high heels...
I understand where you're going, but your logic is flawed.
Explain?
Well, you're saying if this, then that, right? And that's not necessarily true.
No, I'm... Yes. If this is present, and so are a whole bunch of other things, you might be on the right track. That's all I'm trying to say. And
okay, but what you're saying that it's
here from banning Catholics. I'm not sure where. I'm not sure, you know.
Because we're talking about beauty and truth, and the Pope is both. No. The Catholic Pope, I should say. There are many.
Okay, can I change topics? Because we seem to be going in circles here.
Okay, fair.
Yes, yes. Well, the thing is I've got half an hour before I have to leave for work. So okay. I want to – did you guys talk about that post that I gave you?
No.
About the – no? Do you want to?
Sure.
Or do you want to talk about what I want to talk about?
What? Sorry? That's the same thing.
Okay, because the thing I want to talk about is the guy who was recently convicted of sexual assault for poking holes in his condoms.
Oh, no, I thought you were talking about the gay rights thing.
I am talking. That's why I was asking. That's more important. I talked about that first. So if you guys haven't talked about that already.
You set the tone. We decided the topics for the last episode. You can have this one.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, those are the two things that I want to talk about.
Pick one.
The first one, pick one.
We have half an hour.
Okay, the first thing is, gay rights. Now, for those of you who don't know, I stumbled across an article by a gay man who's very upset with the way the gay rights movement has moved in the last 20 years or so, that it has moved away from protecting gay people and homosexuals from discrimination and persecution by the government, and has moved sort of towards this coerced acceptance on society, and that he's really upset about that kind of thing. So as two of my gay friends, Bob and Will, I have linked it to them to seek out their opinions, and their response was, let's talk about it on our first show. So
mm-hmm.
Well, this is half a show, but sure.
Half a show. Yeah. How long are we supposed to go for? Is it supposed to be an hour or two?
I think 90 minutes is to...
90 minutes? Because we can...
An hour and
a half
to two is probably good.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's going to listen to us more than 2 hours.
Yeah.
I mean, at about that point...
Unless we're entertaining.
No. So. We're just yelling at each other. That's not entertaining. Yeah.
Some people would find that entertaining. Oh my God, look at those people who are hardly qualified.
Do you remember who the author was, or the title, or the publication?
I'm looking for it on your Facebook wall, Ducky.
Yeah, it would have been about 2 weeks ago. Look in your Facebook. Wow, look at all the people who want to talk to me on Facebook. I got 11 things. Okay.
Okay, so we need to maybe post links that we want to talk about and whatnot, probably within our Facebook chat thing, so it doesn't get lost. I'm trying to stall and lecture us about being better organized. So
while we find it, because my Facebook feed is filled with nonsense from my frickin' mother who keeps sending me pictures of kittens and rainbows and bullshit like that. And I'm like, Feck off. I don't like you. Boxing Day, imaginary friends.
All right, well, let's move on. I will look for it. You talk.
Okay. All right. The way I see it is that it's just like the evolution of every special rights or special interest group, is that it always starts out from sort of this boohoo, we're persecuted, boohoo, if everybody doesn't love us, we're still being persecuted. And the example that he used was in the 50s or 60s, there were gay bars that were being denied liquor licenses by government because they were gay. Because they openly appealed to homosexual clientele. And that is thanks for finding that. Anyway, you can link it in the description for the video or the podcast or whatever. But basically what he's talking about is how that was the birth of the gay rights movement, pretty much, was this idea that gay establishments and gay people were not to be denied the rights and privileges that is guaranteed to everybody else because they're gay. And that, I think, is a completely legitimate argument, because, I'm, a conservative, which basically means that the government shouldn't be in control of anything. As little as possible, the government should have power over. But deciding who gets which rights is one of those areas that I think the government should has their only position that they have is protecting inherent natural rights for everybody. And beyond that, they should not be deciding who gets which right for what reason. So when the state is actively discriminating against a select group of people, that's something that needs to be challenged and defeated. That being said, it seems like the gay rights movement, and it's not just the gay rights movement, it's every special interest group, from civil rights to women's rights to, gamers' rights.
Men's rights.
I think men's rights is more of an overreaction to – it's not, pro-men. It's more counter-feminist.
Okay.
But we can discuss that later.
Fair enough. I just wanted to say we all need to own that we're part of special interest groups.
Yeah, see, that's why I don't label myself as a men's rights activist, because I'm not interested in raising men. I'm interested in countering the influence of feminism. That's why I prefer to call myself a counter-feminist. I think that a lot of men's rights activists are stuck in the same sort of mentality that feminists have, that eternal victimhood, that boo-hoo-hoo, everybody is against us, and we need special privileges and special rights to help raise us up against what we think is going against us. Anyway, The article basically goes on to talk about, show examples of how the gay rights movement is now being used to coerce acceptance, social acceptance of the gay lifestyle, which I think is an overreaching. And because I think what it can enforce is tolerance. And yes, there's a big difference between tolerance and acceptance. Mm-hmm. And I think that tolerance is all that we as people should be willing to expect from society. When we go around coercing acceptance out of people, I think that's when you have to exert force, that's where you draw the line. You have to exert force in order to discriminate against gays, and you have to exert force in order to coerce acceptance out of people who may not like gays. Does that make sense? And I think that's where you draw the line, is when you have to exert force, and every special rights group. And I think that this article goes pretty well to describe how this gay man in him, like who's within the community, can see how it's being corrupted. And I'm just wondering what you two think of that. Do you agree with it? Do you disagree with it? Because,
Well, myself, I'm a proponent for equal rights, not special rights. Yeah. I've never been a fan of that. I think that the government shouldn't be making distinctions based on any physical or behavioral trait of a person short of criminal, this may be too vague of a statement, but you know what I'm getting at. I mean, race, creed, color.
Yeah,
whatever else that we come up with in 15 years, that kind of makes sense to that. I don't think that laws should be written to be specifically exclusionary. That if you're going to make distinctions, you might make distinctions between adults and children, but even then, you know, there's a lot of slippery slope stuff that may be valid with that statement, but I think you get my point, is that
if a law does not apply to everyone equally, it is unjust inherently.
Yeah, within, and see, this is the hard part. It's, I want to say yes, but I want to say within exceptions, but then we're putting a current morality on, you know, or a present morality on something like, okay, like, let's look at kids then. And I know this is a bit of a going down the rabbit hole here, but, you know, in terms of voting rights for youth, they tend to be more engaged and more aware than most of the adults in it. So why can't we do that, right? So, you know, there's always a yes, but. And it's that but that's really hard to draw the line on that. But that's not really what you're asking. So I'm going to qualify my but with a give me a good argument, and I'll probably back you up on it. But for the most part, definitely a equal rights, not special rights type of mentality. As far as ramming it down people's throats,
because one of the examples that he was expressly talking about was how the government is mandating gay straight alliances in Catholic schools.
The reason for that though, here I am, and I have a double-edged sword that I think I get to wield both ways. So Catholic schools receive public funds.
They do receive public funds.
Therefore, they are under public laws, which means that anything that public, allegedly secular schools are required to do by law, so are Catholic schools.
I don't even think public schools should be enforcing gay straight law. I don't think they should be banning them. But okay, it's not right. Like every school needs to say, okay, you are the gay person that we're going to use as our representative, and you're the straight person. Now hold hands.
Well, I think within that example, the issue is secular versus religious schools. I mean, I think what the government is trying to do is correct an imbalance in sexual culture, if you will, or tolerance or acceptance, but is using the wrong mechanism.
Yeah, I mean,
you're not going to be able to correct this behavior in a religious school.
Speaking in Ontario, it strikes me that what Ontario is trying to do at the moment is to say, if people want GSAs, you are forbidden by law to forbid them, but you are not required to create them. But if you have an identifiable core of people that are having a problem, you need to create a culture where tolerance is what actually happens.
Yes, I'll agree with that. Don't ban them, but don't, you know, don't instill them, don't enshrine them as part of the public school
unless constitution. It's necessary.
Students do it. It should not be.
No, but that's what I mean. Students are allowed to determine whether it's necessary.
Absolutely. And if that's where the power should lie, not with students, right. Not with the administration.
I agree with that.
So the question becomes, at what point is it no longer necessary, or if it is ever necessary for the government to interfere? This issue harkens back to reparations, right?
Reparations for what?
Did I say reparations? I meant, crikey.
Quotas. Yes, affirmative action.
Affirmative action, thank you, sorry. Of which reparations is kind of come out of that. But that's what I'm talking about, right? So at what point do we as a society benefit from an affirmative action? And
I would say never.
Okay. Hold on, let me set this up, because I know you two are on opposite sides of this. So...
Yeah, that's going to, for our dear listeners, that is going to be the way this whole show works, because there's three of us, and two of us will always agree about one subject, and the third one will be always ganged up on. So,
we can do it non-violently, though, says the one who's been yelling for half this current podcast.
Oh, that's okay. Don't worry about it,
man. So at what point does affirmative actions... whether it be within a racial, a gender, whatever you want to flag onto it. At what point is that necessary to basically give, and I think this would be the opposite or the argument for it, is to give society the kick in the ass it needs to start moving down that path. I think that one of the dangers is that these type of programs never go away. And
not only that, but they also create special classes of people that get protected privileges over everyone else. And that's, once again, coming back to laws being unequally applied to different groups of people unjustly.
Absolutely. But one of the roles of the government is to protect us from the tyranny of the majority, right? And that's where these type of programs come in.
I don't usually need accommodations as a physically disabled person. I live with cerebral palsy, so I don't usually need accommodation. But I would be very glad if at some point my roommate should become part of a discussion like this one. I would be very glad for some sort of affirmative action, quote unquote, in certain circumstances, because if I am not present or a certain voice isn't present, then you only get the one perspective. So if you never work with a disabled person, you never have that quota, you'll never, it's statistically unlikely that you will, for example, design spaces according to universal design principles. You know, and you'll never think twice about, well, I climb half a dozen stairs to get to my desk, okay? And all of those things never cross people's minds.
I don't understand how that ties into affirmative action, though.
It does, because then increasing the number, I'm using what's allegedly a Canadian value. In my life, increasing the number of voices or types of voices in a conversation is likely to
but what does that have to do with affirmative action?
Because if you, for example, if you don't have, if, because there are people still in this society, right, who will not tolerate, because I still encounter people, I'm 32 years old, I'm just fine, I'm having this conversation with you. But there are people that if I walked into a job interview would immediately filter me out, even though they give me first interview, because they assume that I'm intellectually compromised because I walk with a limp. This happens in society. And so if there are not mechanisms to correct people's bias, they'll always hire according to confirmation bias and not actually according to ability or accommodating
affirmative action doesn't do that. Affirmative action basically says that it doesn't matter what this person's qualifications are, what kind of class of person they are is more important. If they're a black person, if they're a disabled person, if they're a gay person, they're more important than if they're not black, if they're not gay, if they're not, you know, disabled. That's the problem. It's discriminatory based on something you have no control over. So it's just as bad as racism. It's just as bad as sexism.
Well, it's a reverse of them, right? I mean, but
it's still discrimination.
I could almost
using
get behind it.
Discrimination to if, correct discrimination? I don't understand how that can be justifiable.
I guess part of it is what's a better alternative. As a temporary measure, I could, having not really thought it through, I could support it. I can imagine there may be arguments against it, and I look forward to hearing them. But, you know, if you were to say over this 5-year period, you know, these type of departments or these type of things need this type of quota for this end game in order to correct a societal discrimination or exclusion. I never think that these things should be set in stone, but I can see the benefit to it. I understand the possible tyranny of it, though.
Yeah, I see. Because then we're arguing equality of outcome versus equality of opportunity. And I think that's where the problem lies when we're looking at the end result as whether or not it's working. Because I think that absolutely people should not be discriminated against at all, whether it's in favor or as a detriment. What we need to be doing is teaching people things like walking with a limp, having cerebral palsy does not affect the person's ability to do a good job. Being black or being
Unless
white doesn't
does.
Affect. Well, are you
Unless
a construction worker? Are you a firefighter?
But hold on. My ability to stand to do retail work might be compromised unless you give me support. So level the playing field. This is where I think such policies are trying to go. Whether they get there, obviously, is part of this discussion too. But I think with policies like that, the point is that this playing field is not level. And if you remove systemic biases that would say, well, this person obviously, in quotes, cannot do this job. If I'm in a chair and you give me a ramp, that single ramp might mean I can do that job. Versus, well, it's too expensive, I'm not going to hire you. But if there's a quota, right, and then you're legally mandated to sort of accommodate, or even better, go to universal design when you're my roommate who knows more about these things is going in the background. But when you go to universal design, all of a sudden the accessibility issues become much less, because an even broader spectrum of the entire population has access to the opportunity to do that job.
Yeah, see, I still don't understand what that has to do with affirmative action.
Because
being disabled is not the only special class of citizen that affirmative action seeks to provide support
Correct.
For.
Because I'm sorry, and I'm partially in this class and partially not, so I'm gonna say what I actually think. White, straight, relatively upper class men
are discriminated usually, against everywhere.
But the reason why I said upper class is because none of us in this discussion are upper class white straight males. Okay. But there's a certain kind of masculinity in this culture.
Oh no. Do not start fucking criminalizing masculinity, right?
No. This is why I said there's a certain kind.
It's not masculinity.
There is a certain kind of male-dominated
culture. I absolutely reject any kind of argument that is based off of male or masculinity or female or feminine, okay? These gender stereotypes are not the source of these attitudes, of these ideologies.
Part of the reason why affirmative – I'm being historical. I'm not trying to defend it. Okay, I'm trying to say historically where this comes from. The reason why affirmative action has been deemed necessary across multiple classes is because there is one class that has historically been identified as white, straight, hegemonic males have controlled most of the discourses. And when people who are not that have begun to push back, sometimes the system goes, oops, gotta fix this problem, have to implement a mechanism because people's consciousness will not shift if it's not there. Okay?
See, I really don't agree with that. I think that there are lots of ways to change people's attitudes without mandating it by the fucking government. Without having somebody pointing a gun at you, telling you, you have to do this.
Well, you know...
Because you have to make it voluntary. You have to teach people. You have to teach people how to do things without their biases, not force them to do it. Because if you're going to force somebody to do something, you're taking away their own choices and their own rights. And that's the inherent problem. Discrimination is wrong, period. Okay? I don't think anybody can argue with that. There is no justification that can say it's okay to discriminate against somebody. And using discrimination as a tool to correct discrimination is inherently unjust.
Will mentioned, though, and I think I agree with you, Ducky. The problem is that given the premises and the core values of Canadian society as it currently exists, how do we do it differently? Because we live in a liberal democracy that has class-based human rights sorts of stuff. And
exactly.
I have plenty of problems with that. But, you know...
Then what you do is you identify groups of or companies or, you know, things like how do you go about changing the way a company recycles? Do you force them to recycle, or do you point out that, hey, this is a company that recycles, or this is a company that doesn't recycle? And then the market, the people say, well, we want to support people who, you know, recycle.
The market doesn't have a conscience. The market doesn't
have a
conscience.
The market is people who buy stuff, who vote with their wallets.
I know.
Right?
And,
so you can do the exact same
human
thing.
Human beings make overwhelmingly wise choices with their wallets. We all know that this is true.
My point is that you do not appeal to the government to help you. You appeal to the society or to the citizenry to help you. You go down the ladder. You don't go up.
Okay, but you know where that falls apart is you're making an assumption that there's an egalitarianism here. Like,
right.
You know, you can't. Power isn't, whether it's economic or otherwise, distributed evenly. If everybody had one vote, $1, then the market. But even then, you still have the tyranny of the majority. So you have to protect from everyone deciding against something that they probably shouldn't be doing. And I know that's a contentious thing to, you know, where do you decide what probably means?
Or should.
You know what? Majority rules isn't the best way to rule.
No, I'll agree with that.
Okay.
Because majority of people tend to be stupid.
And then you also have to
protect society from those who don't have a social interest but have an exploitative interest. Mm-hmm. And those tend to be the people, not necessarily are they the people in power, but they tend to be people in power.
Yes.
So, you know, to say let the market decide, I mean, come on. We saw how that worked. In anything. I mean, whether talking about economics or popular votes, take a look at California and this issue that they're dealing with now with their gay marriage amendment to their constitution.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about Prop 8?
Sure. Yeah. The one that's before the Supreme Court right now.
Yeah, I think that's Proposition 8.
Okay.
Came out and said, we're going to legalize gay marriage. And then they were like, I think we should put it to a referendum. And then so they did it during the congressional elections or whatever. And Prop 8 was repealed by referendum. And now it's being challenged in the Supreme Court of the U.S.
Right.
But my point is to leave everything up to the wisdom of the market is a stupid thing to do.
Yes. It's just... I would much rather have the power in the hands of the people than the power in the hands of the government. And I think that's the inherently my biggest problem with
affirmative action. No. See, the government is of the people, at least in these two countries, the U.S. and Canada. We have the ability, successfully or not, not saying that there aren't high barriers to entry, but it's not just the politicians who run the show. It's also the bureaucrats. It's also the garbage men. It's everyone up the chain. It's the people who write for the newspapers. The government isn't some other entity. They're not a natural or an unnatural person, such as a corporation. They are a collective of our will, as distorted and slow and greasy as it is. We have more influence over the government than we do over the market. So to say that it's this other, that's a defeatist attitude, and I don't know where people get that.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you, Ducky, about I'm really, this is why I make a terrible liberal, even though I jump from the left, is because I'm really skeptical about government or systemic, or, you know, Will and I were talking about in Christianity, they're called the principalities and powers. The principalities and powers usually do not have genuine human interests at heart. But people still elect the government here. And, you know, you can have affirmative action, technically speaking, without the government mandating it. A company can just say, we are going to do things this way. Fuck y'all.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And,
which means
and
we don't need to have it mandated by law.
Okay, but we still...
There are voluntarily companies who are willing to do that.
Correct. And to the degree that you can demonstrate that you can phase them out with people behaving in a tolerant or even welcoming gasp, there's a liberal
concept.
See,
that's the problem. I don't think that it's our job to police how people behave. Okay? You're going to have people who behave badly all the time. You're going to have companies that behave badly all the time. And the way you challenge companies that behave badly is with companies who behave well. And supporting companies who behave well. That's what encourages bad companies to stop behaving badly. It's not by having a fucking hammer come down from the from the freaking Parliament building in Ottawa, smacking the bad companies on the hand.
Well, even if I agreed with you in principle, I fail to see the practical application of what you just said.
There's
even
no evidence
to agree with you. Because the thing is, like, because the market is the profit motive, the shareholders must win, okay? Which in the Christian tradition is called greed. So the way that capitalism functions in both Canada and the U.S. is premised on greed to a high degree.
Yes.
Greed is immoral.
I would not agree with that.
Okay, well,
that's making a value judgment of greed.
Yeah.
And I'm not willing to accept a value judgment of anything.
Okay, at the very least, it's an ineffective means of...
I would disagree with that, too. I think it's an absolutely effective means of...
Can I finish? Thank you.
Sorry.
It's an ineffective means of distributing, not even distributing, but of creating an equitable culture.
Yes. Because
by its nature.
That's
by
the problem.
Yes.
Okay, see, but that's what. How do you define an equitable culture? Where everybody has exactly the same bullshit?
No.
Everybody has the same fucking thing?
Do you know?
At least the opportunity to.
No, the opportunity. That's the glory of greed. The more greedy you are, the more likely you are to make overt actions to help accumulate that which you want, to improve yourself, to make yourself better. And the thing that really bugs me about
this. But you're forgetting the tendency to hoard.
This is how I'm going to affirmative action. I'm going to narrow it down to specifically how it's being used to say that the wage gap. Perfect example of affirmative action is how it deals with the gender wage gap, the apparent gender wage gap. Consider this. If a company who is driven solely by the profit motive could get the same amount of work out of a woman for 70% of what they would have to pay a man for the same amount of work, what company in their right mind would hire men?
Because there's still a bias in society that
says that
men do it better.
No,
men do it better.
Listen to me. If companies can make 70% or can save 30% by hiring only women, the successful companies wouldn't hire men. They would have a bias against men if the wage gap was true. But it's not true. And the affirmative action that says you need to hire this many women and use those women or pay those women the same amount as you would pay men,
equal
instead of being
– equal work?
No, the equal work part is what needs to be paid for.
I agree. Equal
okay.
pay
and if,
for equal work.
Right. So stop binding it to the person's sex or to the person's race or to the person's gender. Okay. The thing is it needs to be based on how productive the person is or the job that the person does.
And Duncan just added under his breath, he says it's actually equal pay for equal work of equal value. I agree with you. I'll say I agree with you in principle. So how do you make it work better than it currently does? Like practical solutions, given that unless you've got companies or industries, and there are many, that operate according to salary bands, how are you going to redress that there are, especially women in this society, that still experience
I absolutely deny that that happens. That gap does not exist. And we have shown that it does not exist.
In certain companies and industries.
No. If you take a female scientist and a male scientist, they're both being paid the same. Okay.
Any difference between the two? Because their industry is on a pay band. Okay. That's because that industry or that... Okay. That discipline has decided
The whole wage gap argument comes from if you take all the women in the world or all the women in your jurisdiction and average their wages per hour and all the men in the world and average their wages per hour or the amount of money that they make, right, and mm-hmm. average it, you're going to end up with this demonstrable separation. The problem that I'm trying to make – or the point that I'm trying to make is that wage gap is not the result of discrimination. It is a result of worker choice.
Methodology matters.
I don't understand the distinction because you choose
What the point that I'm trying to make is that if you correct for anything that makes difference between job. Like if you say, okay, well, if we take all the female workers and all the male workers and average their wages, men get paid more than women. Okay. Yes. We'll accept that. All right. Okay. But it's not because of discrimination. So if we correct by job, if every single female garbage truck driver is compared to the wages of every male garbage truck driver, the wage narrows. It gets a little bit closer. It's like 90%. Okay? So, okay, we're not going to correct for just jobs. We're going to correct for how many hours the person works. Okay? So if you get all the female garbage truck drivers who work 60 hours a week and all the male truck drivers who work 60 hours a week and you compare their wages, the wage gap is even closer. And the more and more you correct for these differences in job choices – you actually, when you get the, you know, garbage truck driver who has had, you know, 27 years of experience, okay, who's been in the union for the longest, which I fucking hate unions because of this, who hasn't fucked up, who isn't, you know, taking time off, who isn't, you know, if you get all the two truck drivers who are doing exactly the same thing through their entire career, and the only difference between the two is their genders, the females are actually being paid more by 9%. And we've got numbers to back that up.
Fair. Such as?
Will Ferrell,
yeah.
Yeah, not Will Ferrell.
The acclaimed scientist, Will Ferrell. Researcher extraordinaire.
We should definitely return to this topic because my roommate Duncan is feeding me comments on the sly because he's in HR. And
I think we need to do an episode on feminism.
We'll end up doing several. We're 3 minutes over time, and I still want to talk about the freaking sexual assault of poking holes in condoms, but we can talk about that next week.
All right, well, let's do 5 minutes each.
Oh, my goodness.
Be concise.
We have 5 minutes.
Go.
Oh, you want me to go, or do you want Bobby
to go? It's your idea.
Oh, okay. Well, basically in Nova Scotia, this guy was recently convicted, or his appeal was denied. He was convicted of sexual assault because he had poked holes in his condoms to trick his wife into becoming pregnant, or his girlfriend into becoming pregnant. Mm-hmm. And the judge had basically decided that the woman had not consented to unprotected sex, and therefore it was sexual assault. It was sexual activity without the consent of the person involved.
Okay.
I think this is great. This is totally supportable. Okay?
It makes sense to me so far.
I concur. Okay.
Now, the problem that I have with this is that it is being unequally applied between women, men and women, because there are women who use deceit to trick their husbands into making them pregnant and then using the state to coerce funds from them all the time. And now that we have a law, on
I love how you drop rhetorically all the time. You need to narrow that. I think. What do you mean by all? What do you mean by all the time? What are we talking about here?
Maybe it doesn't matter to you. I don't know if you.
I'm not trying to be slow. I'm just saying I don't understand why you dropped all the time there.
That's an absolute statement. That's not true.
Okay. It is not a one-off. It happens fairly frequently where men are being coerced into parenthood against their will. And the argument that is always being used is that having sex is consent to children. Okay? For men, not for women, but for men.
So your issue isn't so much the decision of the judge, but prompted a realization that it's not being.
No, it's
similar.
Not prompted. I'm just glad that now there is a precedent on the law books, at least in Nova Scotia, that states that sex itself is not consent to unprotected sex. It is not consent to children, to parenthood. And now we have it legally bound, which means that this can be used to help protect men who are being coerced into fatherhood against their will by the decisions made by their partner.
What's good for the goose is good for the gander.
It should be, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't see a problem if you're going to sabotage a contraceptive, then, you know, you're compromising the consent of your partner. So, absolutely. I think we can all be in agreement on this.
Yeah, I'm like, I have nothing to add. Next.
Okay, well, there's my 5 minutes. Well, Bob, it's your turn. Your 5 minutes for closing arguments, I guess.
Oh, closing arguments about what? I don't know. I definitely have enjoyed this discussion. I apologize for getting really heated in the middle.
At least you showed up on time, so.
Well, you know, I try.
I think we all equally yelled into our microphone, and for anyone listening, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So,
but expect more of it.
the struggle, like for me, is that I choose as much as possible a nonviolent philosophy, and so physical violence. Okay. Given that gimpy. Hold on. Hey, come on. So yeah, the fact that I'm gimpy means I'm obviously not going to be kicking anybody's ass, or at least it's going to be extraordinary effort.
Violence by proxy is still violence, though. I've had this argument with left-wingers before.
And
endorsing violence by the state is the same thing as endorsing by yourself. Yes, you cannot justify being nonviolent yourself and then turn around and demand that the police exert violence on your behalf.
This is why I'm a terrible liberal, because I agree with you, and my struggle lately is to, because I constantly bump into situations where I need to think through my commitment to nonviolence or pacifism more deeply. And so, especially in terms of yelling into a mic, this is not consistent with a peace position.
I apologize. That yelling into a mic is not really violent either.
Well,
violence is the exertion of force against another person or property.
Yeah, I hear that.
Rile each other up, though. I mean, you should have heard the last episode. Holy, that was very civil compared. But you know what? That's okay. That's interesting, right?
Will and I don't generally rile each other up. Yeah, I hear you.
All right, well.
I used less than 5 minutes.
It's Willie's turn.
For 5 minutes. I don't know if I have much to say. I think maybe we should continue on with
What the hell was that?
It's my cat.
Well, whatever you're doing, it sounds illegal, so please stop.
I was petting her. She doesn't like getting petted, edited.
All right. So whatever. I think that going forward, we'll, you know, try to be better organized and posting links in our internal chat, so that way we can distribute them easier and not trip up.
Try to be on time as well.
Being on time would also really be helpful.
It might be an idea if listeners would be interested if we actually are referring to links or to articles that we could have a blog.
Yeah.
Here's the stuff that we covered.
Yeah. See, I don't know how Will's going to set it up when he's posting this, so I don't know if there is a description or a blog role or something.
Yeah, we'll take care of that. I mean, we won't discuss the details of that right now. The three of us can deal with that offline. I want to thank anyone who is listening this far, at least, to making it to the end. Your loyalty is appreciated. And it seems that we have solved all the world's problems for today.
Even though we are hardly
qualified to do so.
I hope that you will join us again next time and bring a friend. Or an enemy. I'm sure either one will take pleasure in what we're saying. And thank you very much.
So would you guys agree that Bob is on the left, I'm on the right, and Will is in the middle?
Generally, that might work. But
I don't know if I'm so much in the middle as I can't get a word in edgewise.
Tug of war!
All right, I'm going to stop the recording, right?